coming up on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast.
Okay, so we've had the really powerful experience. You guys have built these communities. Now, how are you going to ground those lessons on Earth and start living that? And for me, that's being in some kind of a land-based community that really we can be accountable to the Earth in how we're living. Because what I really believe these medicines do is they help us do the personal work, but they also help us look at how we're living as a culture and a society, and they help us look at the larger patterns of life itself on Earth. And so what I'm wanting to see is, in this moment where there's a great deal changing globally and economically, how can we really begin to live what we know and live the teachings that we've been given? You know, it's like the Earth has given us these gifts of this amazing medicine that opens our eyes and shows us the miracle of living on Earth and all the different species and all the different, you know, natural support systems we have to just being healthy. How can we give back to the Earth? What steps can we take towards being more responsible stewards, more responsible participants in this grand orchestra of life? So for those that are running retreats and doing that work globally, that's kind of my call to action.
Welcome to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast, a weekly conversation series with leaders in psychedelic culture, designed for therapists, healers, retreat leaders, and passionate enthusiasts, presented by Maya and hosted by me, Eamon Armstrong. Welcome to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. My guest today is Ian Michael Hebert, co-founder of Holos, an organization of holistic healing centers and communities launching first in Costa Rica. On the show, we discuss a holistic approach to psychedelic medicine. We talk about the retreat model and Ian Michael's recommendations globally. He shares his perspective on psychedelic ethics and why it is so important to be in integrity with local communities. Born in Alaska, Ian Michael is the former director of projects at Esalen Institute at Big Sur. He holds a master's in counseling psychology from CIIS, and he is the co-founder and CEO of Holos. Psychedelic healing is holistic. Let's take this movement forward in a way that best honors the places, people, plants, and practices that make this work possible.
Hello, sir.
You look good.
Feeling good.
You look all fresh and clean.
I showered yesterday.
Hey, there you go. Before we start, how are you doing?
Well, I'm really happy to be in Costa Rica. And besides that, and my kids being in the States and things on lockdown there, things are really good. I feel like my kids are safe and happy, and I know that my work is here right now, so I just had to really honor that.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're beautiful space. I'm good. I'm definitely seeing some really lovely opportunities for heart-centered leadership right now, which feels really good. So that makes it easier to be at home.
I'm just going to start speaking into the mic, but we'll sort of officially launch as we launch. So I'm interested in talking about Holos, and I've gone through the deck, and there's some things that stuck out to me that I really love. So I'm going to talk about some of the things that I noticed that I love, because the through line for me is that the psychedelic renaissance is an opportunity for a deeply ethical blossoming, and a blossoming in alignment with what these medicines are giving to us, the blessings of these medicines. And part of why it's so important that we are rigorously inclusive, that we're lifting people up who've been voices in this space for a long time, that we're honoring these indigenous wisdom traditions. Part of why that's so important is because that is within the trajectory of the blossoming of these plant medicines themselves. You know, that's very aligned. And so when I look at Holos and I see, you know, You broke it down into places, people, plants, and practices.
Mm-hmm.
And that the places are in nature supported by local communities. That's really important to me. That the plants are regeneratively grown, sacred medicines. These aspects are so important. And I think that for anyone who is interested in the space of psychedelic therapy, everything means everything. You know, everything is connected. Everything mm-hmm. matters. The supply chain of these plants matters. The local communities matter. Where this is happening matters. Who is included matters. So even if you have just heard about ketamine therapy for depression and thought, God, I really want to help patients with depression, I'm going to go in this direction of ketamine therapy, there's such a beautiful lineage up to this point of psychedelic medicines across the board to drop into that ends up ultimately answering so many of the questions that a new psychotherapist or a psychedelic therapist, pardon me, would have. And it feels like we're kind of jumping into the conversation now. So forgive me for not necessarily giving you the full landscape. It's going to be a pretty easy. Well, okay. Well, I will do what you've asked, even though I'm just kind of
you. You articulated that so well. The whole picture of what it is to be in a responsible container and how this work is connected to everything from culture to agriculture to the therapists themselves and the work that they've done. That's why we set these really clear pillars of people, you know, which are practitioners, plants, and how they're respected and how they're grown, the places that this work is done, and then the practices that help us integrate and to live lives that are more fulfilled. That's, you know, all of those components are really important to my vision of how we continue this work, which has roots thousands of years ago. And just looking at that larger context that any of this work is happening is really important for the whole integration process, I think. If people have these really deep experiences that repattern their psyches, repattern their ways of seeing the world, and they have the opportunity to see a world that is actually humans and nature working in consort with one another in harmony, then I think that is one of the best trim tabs that we have as a species.
Would you just mind defining trim tab for me quickly, for those who aren't familiar with Buckminster Fuller's work?
Yeah. So a trim tab is basically this small rudder on a large ship that if you adjust that rudder, you can make an exponential change happen relatively quickly with a small amount of energy. So we have this huge boat called humanity that's been making its way through time. And the trim tabs are those moments where we have the opportunity to make a shift. And some of those shifts have been at the detriment of the ecology of our planet and our basic life support systems. And so my hope, and I believe the work of Buckminster Fuller really well articulated, those trim tabs that can actually move us towards greater sustainability as a species and regeneration of life and systems that are in harmony with the earth.
I love that you have created something called Holos, and that what we are talking about just right out the gate is holistic healing. Because for me, as a psychedelic therapy patient in many different experiences, what I have learned is that my depression is not an isolated thing. My anxiety is not an isolated thing. My trauma is not an isolated thing. The things that I want to heal in myself are not isolated. And I think in the history of Western medicine, for all of the boon that has come in Western medicine, there has been an instinct throughout much of the history of Western medicine to isolate and treat, to separate and to say that, okay, this piece is treated in this way, there's a problem here, and we'll focus on this in this way. And what I love about psychedelic medicine is that it doesn't just heal the symptom. It doesn't just heal the root cause. It heals, and as you said, the trim tab for humanity. As a trim tab for humanity, it's a holistic healing for the whole individual and potentially a cultural healing. So when we are healing our childhood trauma, part of what psychedelic medicine teaches us, many of us, taught me, is that childhood trauma was actually ancestral trauma passed on, which is actually cultural trauma. Your approach to psychedelic healing, plant medicine healing, has that big picture. And that's no accident, right? I mean, you definitely are a holistically minded person.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, there's all these moments of potential genesis for trauma or for dis-ease. And one of the teachings that I deeply appreciate from my mentor Stan Grof is the holotropic paradigm, which is moving towards wholeness, holotropic. And the other one of his great bodies of work talks about the perinatal matrices. And so in that, he's looking at the original birth trauma that every human being goes through. It's a very abrupt transition to go from being inside the womb to being an individuated human being. And as a species, we require a lot of care and nurturing after being in the womb. And so it's this gateway that we all go through, whether we have a vaginal birth or whether we're a cesarean birth. We go from a state of incubation to a state of individuation. And that has a number of different stages that have very distinct imprints on the nervous system and on the psyche. And so a lot of psychedelic work or holotropic breath work takes you back to some of those original patternings of how we show up in the world and how we experience the other. And so you're right. When we go back to the origins, whether it's ancestral or biological or from our childhood experiences, and we have the opportunity to really be with those experiences in a new way and then repattern our response to the world around us, there's tremendous healing that can happen through that process. And, you know, breathwork is definitely one of the other means, and psychedelics being another.
Well, I think that we should take a little pause here and kind of introduce you to the listener, because we've jumped right into the yummy stuff we most like to talk about. And of course, you and I already have a relationship, which is entirely unfair to the listener, who will have gotten an introduction about who you are. But let's take a moment to talk about you, Ian Michael. So you've worked with Esalen, and that's where I know you from. Can you tell me just a little bit about what has brought you to a place where you're creating global plant medicine healing retreats? Because I think a lot of people who are interested in doing that themselves would love to hear a biographical tale of what got you to the point where you're creating what you're creating now.
Yeah, I would be delighted to share some of the story of this life. And I'm going to take it all the way back to birth.
Well, of course. I mean, that's what we were just talking about. That's where the imprints happened.
So I was born in the middle of Alaska, in the Golden Heart of Alaska in Fairbanks, to two parents who had moved up there during the Back to the Land movement in the 70s. So they were really, you know, pioneering people that wanted to be connected to the land, wanted to be in communities that were vibrant and healthy and also isolated. And so I was born in the early 80s in Alaska and got from a very early age the importance of resilience in human systems, and also got a really clear experience of what it is to take trauma on from your family. And so I, you know, had a very colorful childhood, and my psychedelic experiences started in my teenage years. And I utilized psychedelics as a way to discover the origins of things that were inside me, like depression or social anxiety, and just to open again to the wonderment of being in such an incredible, beautiful place like Alaska. You know, it's like if we have in our system some kind of resistance to life itself, or if we have some kind of a dis-ease with our lives, then we can be in the most exquisite, beautiful place, totally nourished, and still feel hollow or still feel challenged by our experience of being human. And so that's kind of the state that I was in as a teenager. And through psychedelic exploration and community and nature, I really began to unravel what an amazing mystery it is to be human at this time on Earth. And I also really started to see the patterns of the larger globe from that vantage point of Alaska, and started to see that there was a lot of disharmony and there was a lot of disrespect for our Mother Earth. And my dad calls Alaska and the North the crown chakra of Gaia. And so I was having both this experience of transpersonal realms, whether with plant medicine or just being in nature. And then I was having this very earthly experience of a community that was living off the land to a large extent and needed to have its basic needs met of food, water, and shelter. And so at 17, I had a really high dose mushroom experience, laid down in the forest and left my body and was kind of prepared to not come back to it. And I had this experience with the divine or the unity that basically showed me that it's accessible anytime. So came back to my body, decided to keep living on Earth, and I took a good 13-year break from psychedelic medicine or psychedelic experiences. And during that time, I really focused on meditation, raising kids, and living in a good way in Alaska, and really learning about sustainable living practices for the North. And the focus of my life from 17 until now really began focusing on how can we create resilient nodes of villages or places where people are really seeing the gifts of the land and are really connected to one another. And so at 18, I hitchhiked from Alaska to Mexico with the desire of ending up in a place where, as a young vegan in Alaska, I could live in a more sustainable way. Growing up in Alaska, living a lot off of the bounty of the land and the animals that lived there, and then coming to a place where I no longer wanted to eat meat, I realized, okay, maybe there's a better place for me to be during the winter. And so I had the goal of coming down to Belize or Costa Rica and living in a sustainable way here. And now I find myself during a world quarantine in Costa Rica, working on a farm and really building the foundations of what's possible here as far as growing regenerative medicine, building community, and really getting tied into the local culture.
Mm. Wow, there's so many little threads in there. A couple of things that I wanted to highlight for our listeners. One, you talked about a really powerful transpersonal medicine experience when you were a teenager. Do you feel that it is important for someone who is doing psychedelic therapy or hosting psychedelic retreats to have had A, to have had sort of any experience with plant medicine, or B, to have had a threshold level experience, a heroic dose, some kind of experience that really crossed the threshold into something really powerfully transpersonal? Do you feel that both or either of those experiences are necessary for someone to do the work that you do?
I think that it can very much help. And there's a system of psychology that I studied in grad school at CIIS called psychosynthesis. It was started by a man, Roberto Assagioli, and it's a system that I really respect. He was a student of Freud and then broke off from Freud during his doctorate and basically said, okay, I really appreciate that you're focused on the basement of the human experience, but there's this totality of potential human experiences that includes all these transpersonal realms. And so they have this diagram called the egg diagram, which is basically a diagram of the psyche with the will in the middle. And the egg expands into the lower unconscious and the higher unconscious. And as we have transpersonal experiences, or as we dig into some of the origins of our childhood trauma, we expand our consciousness into these realms of the unconscious. And psychedelics is one tool that expands those parameters and expands our perspectives, expands our consciousness into those realms. And there's a lot of other techniques or life experiences that will take you to those places. I would say that one of the primary is having a close relationship to death. And so people that have worked in hospice or lost a loved one or watched someone cross that threshold or have had some kind of a near-death experience themselves, I think all of those can be catalysts for moving into those states of consciousness that psychedelics also bring us to. And then there's also just spontaneous moments of reverie in nature or breathwork experiences that really show us other ways of experiencing life. So the main thing is that I believe psychedelic psychotherapists and practitioners need to have a really broad understanding of the possible states of consciousness that someone can experience when in a psychedelic state, and the capacity for one's own one's own psyche to hold those experiences translates into the capacity to hold that for another and to be witness to it. So I think that's, you know, there's a lot of different shamanic traditions with many different trainings of how they get their wisdom keepers to a point of being able to hold space and hold healing processes for others. Sometimes it's isolation in a cave. Sometimes it's a high dose psilocybin experience. Sometimes it's years of doing dietas with ayahuasca. So, you know, there's many roads to expanding one's consciousness, and psychedelics being one. There are programs right now that are training people to be psychedelic psychotherapists, where they're in jurisdictions where you can't legally administer psychedelic medicine. And so I understand that in the overall field, this is a large question. And my personal hope and recommendation is that, yes, if you're administering a medicine to someone, that you really know the characteristics and the texture of that medicine and what it can bring out.
And so for you, when you decided that you wanted to create Holos, are you doing this as a retreat leader who is employing other practitioners, or are you yourself conducting psychedelic therapy?
Both. Right now, I am conducting psychedelic psychotherapy with the medicines that I feel have communicated to me, or one of my wisdom teachers has communicated to me that it's, you know, that it's time for me to hold space in that way. And then I also have a network, a broad global network of great practitioners that I feel are well equipped to serve people.
And you talked about trainings for psychedelic therapists, for example, the certificate in psychedelic therapy from CIIS versus the, you know, wisdom traditions, shamanic trainings. What kind of trainings do you have under your belt in terms of conducting psychedelic therapy? In what ways do you feel equipped, credentialed? What do you bring to the table when you're approaching a client to say, this is how I'm trained, this is what I can offer for you?
Yeah. The first foundation was personal experience and studying from, for lack of a better word at this moment, shamans when I was younger, when I was a teenager, and then having a very strong meditation practice throughout my 20s. And then in my 30s, I moved to San Francisco, did a master's in counseling at CIIS in integral counseling psychology, as well as community mental health. And so I bridged those two fields at CIIS in a way that I think gave me a very holistic understanding of both the integral counseling paradigm and Sri Aurobindo's work, which basically says, you know, we are all God, we are all consciousness waking up to itself. And then I also had the grounding of the community mental health program, which is very much based in the recovery model, working with more challenging diagnoses, et cetera, et cetera. And then as I was finishing my grad studies, I was an intern psychotherapist. I was also working in a boys' home with traumatized youth that were no longer working within the systems of education or foster care system. And we held space for very extreme states of consciousness and trauma and reaction. And during that time, I was also working with elders who were on the threshold of passing from this world and either had suicidal tendencies or depression or these different challenges that they were facing in realizing their mortality. So that was a really good, solid grounding. And then as I finished grad school, I moved to Esalen Institute, and I was there as the director of projects for 4.5 years. And through relationship building there with a lot of different wisdom keepers, I built a body of knowledge of all these different traditions and ways that people are realizing the human potential or addressing current challenges and expanding our capacity as humans to meet those challenges. So that was a lot of my foundation. And then with each medicine, whether it's psilocybin or San Pedro or ayahuasca, I have teachers that that I work with, that I continue to learn from. And, you know, this is a long arc of experiences that I think prepares me to some extent to hold space for others, and to a larger extent with particular medicines and with particular techniques. And so, you know, I take the approach of always being a student and being really humble about it, and also listening to my intuition at any given moment about what is needed and how I can best serve. And if I'm not the one to be serving medicine or being able to serve an individual, then I very much state that and help find the right container and the right person to guide them.
Mm. I love that you have such a holistic background, you know, so many different threads that come together to give you a skill set around this. Have you noticed, as you've started working through Holos, have you noticed any kind of blind spots in your skill set that you're like, oh, I need to have a better understanding of the pharmacology or the medical contraindications? Have you noticed things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Contraindications is something that I'm really careful about and have a lot more to learn on. And so there's certain medicines that I am, you know, personally, that I don't carry or that I have caution about. And then there's reasons that for Holos, we've chosen to right now be working with ayahuasca, San Pedro, psilocybin, 5-MeO, and breathwork. And then there's other medicines that are really powerful and useful. And there's specific reasons why I'm not personally or recommending the use through Holos. And that's mostly because there are still things for me to learn. And I think there's still things for the global psychedelic movement to learn about particular medicines. And so contraindications is definitely one of them. The other is just continuing to do my own personal work and recognizing where there's gaps of attunement or where I can better be equipped to holding the space for others. And so, you know, those are nuanced learnings that I continue to attune to, but I would say that's the biggest one, recognizing things that come up for me as a practitioner or during a ceremony that I still have to learn to hold in a better way so that I can hold better space for others. Hmm.
And when you have a question that you don't know the answer to, for example, a question that has come up for me is, I take a supplement called SAMI. It's a naturally occurring part of my methylation cycle. It helps with my mood health. And I've never found anything that tells me whether there's a contraindication with the MAO inhibitor in ayahuasca and if I should go off of that. I go off of it because it's similar to like a 5-HTP, not the same as like a St. John's wort or an SSRI. I know we're getting a little medical in this moment, but the setup of the question is essentially, for me as a layperson, I don't know where to go to get those, to understand those contraindications. I can Google it and I can look on, you know, Blue Light or Arrowhead or the psychedelic wiki. You know, I kind of poke around. But for you, as someone who is doing this professionally, not only leading as a therapist, but actually creating retreat centers and working with other practitioners, where do you go to find the answers to your questions?
All of those that you just mentioned are good resources, and cross-referencing and looking at the different sources is a part of the process. Another is just talking to mentors and checking in about things. And if they don't have the answer, then going to the next person or going to another resource. This is one of the big questions in the field, as far as there's not a foundation of knowledge yet to build sufficient safety in my mind for some medicines and for some conditions. And I have a individual in MAPS Canada who has compiled an amazing database of files and all the studies. And there's a lot of studies that actually have been forgotten about from the 70s and 80s before things really locked down. There was a lot of studies that happened in Canada, in the US, in the Czech Republic, in the UK. So there is some body of knowledge, but, you know, as you mentioned, there's a lot more supplements and ways that people are being treated and SSRIs that weren't around during that time. And so my approach has been, to the greatest extent possible, you know, to have a clean diet and some of your basic metrics understood of your body and how your biochemistry works. And then that gives the practitioner a lot more easy foundation to work from, a lot less variables. And that's one reason that I appreciate working with traditional medicines and healers, because there's a longer arc of knowledge in the culture of what works and what could potentially be a risk factor. So that's one of the approaches that I take. I'm also a founding member in the board of the Canadian Psychedelic Association. It's a nonprofit that we're just starting that is going to be a repository of education and advocacy work for the overall Canadian psychedelic community. And my hope with that is that we will eventually have those resources aggregated in one place that people can utilize.
And you mentioned your colleague at MAPS Canada had compiled information. Is that at all publicly available?
I know that he sends it to people. So if anybody wanted to reach out to me, I'd feel comfortable connecting or sending the link to the to the Dropbox.
Well, great. Well, we'll put that information in the show notes, because I think that for a lot people who are going to be listening to this podcast are going to be at varying stages of their work. And there are people who are passionate about psychedelic medicine and just starting out, and maybe they're working with one teacher. They don't necessarily have the robust background that you have, and just hungry for knowledge that can be verified and that they can really understand the sources. And we mentioned earlier, I mentioned Arrowhead and Blue Light and some of these places. My experience of looking at those places is a lot of it is anecdotal. And while it surfaces some knowledge that can be useful in a sort of Reddit style upvoting and kind of things do surface, it still feels very anecdotal. And it seems like there's such a deluge of information, it's hard to ascertain exactly what is going to be most applicable. And when we're talking about patient safety, you know, there's so much risk there. You know, we don't have governing bodies. It's wonderful that you're beginning to create one in Canada, but there, you know, there aren't the governing bodies there present for this. And so as we're talking about the information, how do you validate? Do you have certain sources where you're like, I know, whether it's MAPS or Imperial College, or do you have certain sources where you're like, if it comes from this source, I know it's right and I can trust it and feel secure?
There are definitely academic institutions that have good reputations that I trust. And then I think it's always useful to look at who funded the study. And, you know, that's just good due diligence with any bit of information. So usually it's when it comes from an academic source that I really trust it. There is a gap here that needs to be filled, and there's significant resources starting to go into research, and that's really encouraging. And I think as the US and Canada and other highly developed nations that have the resources and the medical facilities start to really get on board with the power of these medicines, that we'll see more funding for research. But that is a significant need at this time. And the thing that you know, we have to understand about research, this is moving, you know, the awareness of psychedelic medicine is moving very quickly, and the desire for people to, you know, treat their depression or PTSD or different challenges is becoming very public, but the pace of research is much slower. So you can see a great example of this with MAPS and their PTSD and MDMA studies. You know, it's taken a very long time to get to the point of legitimacy and through the different phases of the trials. And now we have something that is really well vetted and can start to be implemented in a medical way or in a more medicalized way. And so, you know, now is the time to be funding those studies so that we can have a lot more broad knowledge base 10 years from now. I'm taking, you know, very much the longer arc approach with Holos and looking at what is civilization going to need and what are people going to need 100 years from now. And what can we be building now and what can we be supporting now that's going to create those conditions for thriving at that, you know, seven generations down the line?
And is that part of why you are approaching this with the retreat model and wanting to create a network of spaces around the world with this long-term view?
Yeah, exactly. So initially, we're running retreats in order to prototype and really get to know what works for people and what people are wanting and what the right format for this moment in time is, because we have very, you know, unique conditions in the world. And so that's why we're running retreats, and we're also identifying those retreat centers that carry all the values that we have and are stewarding land in a good way and are able to hold the container in a particular, you know, with a particular clarity.
You definitely got exactly to what I wanted to ask you too. I would love, if you don't mind, if you could share some of those centers that you vetted that are partner centers that you love around the world, because I think we're all interested in what models we can really align with. And I'd personally just love to know who you love, who's doing this work.
Yeah. It's interesting. I see show up in me like a certain hesitation, because
fair.
I have such a high bar of integrity, and I also very much want to experience all of these places myself before really being able to say, yes, this is who I vouch for. And that being said, I'm watching the overall field and I'm seeing who is doing good work and who has good reviews or a good reputation. And I'm also working with a group out of Canada called Retreat Guru. They're a great resource for ayahuasca retreats and other retreats, in that they kind of have the Airbnb model where people can rate what's happening. And so you get a little bit of a metric there, but they went to all the retreat center owners that were running ayahuasca retreats and said, who do you recommend? And so that was, I think, a really good move on their part. And it gave me a couple that I could continue to build relationships with, one being the Temple of the Way of Light in Peru, Niha Rao in Peru. I think that Synthesis in the Netherlands is doing a really good job and holds a clear container. And then a lot of the other centers are still underground and are questioning how public they want to be. So that's another big component that I'm looking at, is where are the jurisdictions that are starting to open to a point that we can safely operate and legally operate? Because that's the threshold for Holos, is that we need places that we can actually share this with the world and feel protected and feel safe in what we're doing. So there are centers in Canada that are ready for that. There are definitely centers down here in Costa Rica that are ready for that, and we're also building one. That's where I'm at here during this interesting moment on planet Earth, where borders are closing and we're taking a pause. The best thing that I knew how to do was go to cultivate land, plant medicine, get to know the local community in a deeper way. And so, you know, we're eventually building a center down here in Costa Rica. And then as the legal atmosphere in the U.S. starts to become more welcoming, we also intend on working within particular laws to have a center in the U.S. So I know that that wasn't a direct answer to your question or a list of what the best places are, but that's where we're at now.
And that was a better answer, because you answered the deeper question, which is beyond just who's good, how do we know who's good? And how do we ourselves create things that are good? How do we, and by good, I mean in integrity, because what I've found in this space is like, what is the highest integrity? Keep going to the highest integrity. And if we, as the psychedelic community, create attractors to best practices, that's the way that we are going to make sure that these medicines can get to the most patients possible who really need them, and that they're all going to get that care that they really need, as opposed to a sort of extractive medical model, which we've seen in sort of like bigger companies. Psychedelic care is complex. You know, it's a complex experience because it's treating the whole being, and you need to be treated by humans with love, you know? And so we need really clean vessels, really clear containers. And I think that
one of the great tragedies of underground psychedelic therapy and shamanism is that when these things are not vetted, there are bad actors who can take advantage of people when they're in these incredibly vulnerable states. And so integrity, integrity, integrity. And so what I love about how you answered the question is, well, here's how I can answer it. Here's a couple examples that I like. Go talk to those folks. And it's just great to see who's kind of popping up. And I love that Retreat Guru approached the practitioner to say, well, okay, who are you looking to? And it's a really interesting landscape for that reason. And there's one thing that you said there that wasn't totally clear, which is what jurisdictions are amenable to psychedelic therapy right now in the world? And which jurisdictions do you anticipate coming online in the near future?
Oh, wow. That's a beautiful and huge question. The amount of specificity of each country is really unique. So like Synthesis in Amsterdam or outside of Amsterdam, they can administer truffles, which are the underground portion of the psilocybin mushroom, but they can't administer mushrooms. So that legally is taking place right now and works. In Jamaica, mushrooms are legal, and so you're starting to see things sprout up there. And then there's the South American countries like Peru, Brazil, where it's a very well-established traditional practice, and so people are going down there. So legally, there's a lot of work happening with San Pedro and ayahuasca in those countries. Mexico has fairly lenient laws right now, so there's a lot of psychedelic work that's happening in Mexico, especially when it's in an indigenous context. So there's these countries where there has been thousands of years of tradition and these medicines have been used, like in the U.S. with peyote. And so these have been tested through the court system as being legitimate sacraments or sacred practices or medicines. And Guatemala is another one where there's enough of a gray area where it's not illegal to administer certain psychedelic medicines. So we're tracking all of this, and I'm not going to go through country by country, but the two that I'm really paying attention to are Canada and the US. The reason I'm really paying attention to those is there's a great deal of mental illness and suffering. There's an openness by the general public to these medicines being potentially able to address people's challenges. And the door is just cracking open enough where we can see the future. So MAPS work with MDMA definitely was one of those steps towards opening the door. The studies that are happening at Johns Hopkins and other institutions in the U.S. are slowly opening the door on psilocybin. And I hesitate to go too deep down those rabbit holes, partially because of the controversy of different opinions and just wanting to stick with what I know at this point. What I know at this point is psilocybin is still illegal in the U.S. and Canada, but it is being administered in the U.S., fairly publicly in places where the decrim movement has taken hold. So the decrim movement is the decriminalized nature movement. And there are cities like Oakland, Denver, Santa Cruz that have started to open the door to people not being prosecuted. So it's more of a deprioritization, which means that it becomes the lowest priority of the local law enforcement, but it is still federally illegal. So that's a threshold that for Holos, we're not willing to cross. We're not willing to cross federal illegality. So we're tracking that. And I think that there are opportunities in the U.S. There's a law that allows the use of medicines that have made it past phase one for those that have terminal illnesses. So we're really vetting that law and looking at if that's a possibility for administering psilocybin in the U.S. to terminally ill patients. In Canada, they are selling psilocybin publicly in Vancouver. And this is the way that cannabis took hold, and which is now, you know, becoming brought. I mean, it's a huge, huge business in North America now. So psilocybin is following that same trajectory in Canada, where it is still illegal technically, but it's being sold publicly. and they voted in the city council on whether to start enforcing it, and they decided not to. So the writing is on the wall. There's also information in Canada, which, you know, I'm just going to say that the medical establishment in Canada is starting to look at how effective these different medicines are, whether it's psilocybin, MDMA, ketamine, or iboga. And they're putting serious inquiry into both the laws and the administration of these medicines. So those are the dawnings that are happening in North America that I'm really tracking and excited about.
Outside of the legality piece, which I think is on everybody's mind in terms of of these medicines, what are some of the other big challenges that you face, both as a psychedelic therapist, but especially as a retreat center holder? What challenges are you facing? What are you thinking about? Who are you talking to about? What's kind of in the ether about these challenges that you're facing?
Yeah. One of the things that I'm seeing is there's kind of two categories, or maybe three. There's one are the established retreat centers that are able to like really put their flag down and say, okay, this is what we're administering, this is what we're offering, which are like in Peru or Jamaica or Amsterdam or Costa Rica. And then the next category, I would say, of practitioners are the people that are running retreats, and they're kind of going to different places in the world where they're able to operate. And I think that that's beautiful. And people are like gathering a lot of momentum and community around them to hold those containers. And then what I'm wanting to see, or my question in that, is like, okay, so we've had the really powerful experience. You guys have built these communities. Now, how are you going to ground those lessons on earth and start living that? And for me, that's being in some kind of a land-based community that really we can be accountable to the earth in how we're living. Because what I really believe these medicines do is they help us do the personal work, but they also help us look at how we're living as a culture and a society, and they help us look at the larger patterns of life itself on earth. And so what I'm wanting to see is, in this moment where there's a great deal changing globally and economically, how can we really begin to live what we know and live the teachings that we've been given? You know, it's like the earth has given us these gifts of this amazing medicine that opens our eyes and shows us the miracle of living on earth and all the different species and all the different, you know, natural support systems we have to just being healthy. How can we give back to the earth? What steps can we take towards being more responsible stewards, more responsible participants in this grand orchestra of life? So for those that are running retreats and doing that work globally, that's kind of my call to action. And the third category of person is like the individual practitioner doing the work. And a lot of that is still happening very much underground, especially in North America. And so what I'm seeing there as a challenge is how do people build the community? How do people build the accountability, the guilds, and share best practices and continue to develop the field in a way that's really responsible and considerate?
Well, all of those are really helpful areas to explore. And what's beautiful about starting a podcast in this space is there's really intelligent, wise, studied people who will have their various answers to those questions. So it's super nice for me to kind of like seed some of that now in this one of our very first podcasts, and to think about, okay, how do we help people solve those? And I think this idea of community around individual practitioners who are doing underground therapy and are, you know, as legality is changing, hoping to build robust businesses that support themselves, where they're in integrity with their communities, is an ongoing conversation, and one that can be really answered not by a single answer, but by a community coming together to have an ongoing conversation about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. The other thing that came up on my radar while you were talking is just, what is our relationship to the local communities that we're working in? What is our relationship to the indigenous practices that have been in those areas? How do we truly honor them and learn from them and have a you know, across a dialogue, a true dialogue. So one example is we just ran a retreat down here in Costa Rica called Living Visions. And the basic premise was to show the participants and show the people like a way of being in good relations with the entire region and the entire country and the land itself. So some components of that retreat were we visited a place that has a living library of entheogenic plants. So we got to see how do these plants grow and like what is it to cultivate and to give back and to really keep the sustainability and regeneration of these plants alive. Another major component was what food we ate. We went to the local farmers market, this big feria, and we showed people, okay, here's where the farmers are coming from. 100% of the food that we served was local and regionally local. And then the other component that was extremely important to me for our community that we're building down here and for the retreat center we're building, but also for just an honoring of the land, is that we brought a Bribri elder down from the mountains of Talamanca. And they have a tradition of using psilocybin mushrooms that grow here. And so we brought this elder. He had never done ceremony with Westerners before. He came down and we were really blessed by his presence and his teachings and the teachings of his apprentice. And one of the things that was really poignant for me is that he brought his partner with him, and she had never been in a car before, didn't speak Spanish really. She spoke Bribri. And for me to slow down enough to look at, oh my gosh, this is how her nervous system is calibrating to this new experience. And this is how intense it is for her to be, you know, meeting a new culture. It was really humbling. Like it really showed me the importance of slowing down and really considering what's happening and how we impact a place and other cultures. So, you know, I'm hopeful that those kind of exchanges can happen with a lot of dignity and a lot of care. There's a teaching that I was given by the Kogi Mamos. So the Mamos are the Kogi teachers, wisdom keepers from Colombia. They were one of the last tribes there to get contacted by the Western world. And they felt the call recently to come to Costa Rica. And so we were with them and learning from their teachings, and they were sensing into the landscape and they were sensing into the overall culture here. And one of the things they gave as a really clear instruction is whenever you go to a new land, you want to ask permission from the grandmother and the grandfather of that region that you have permission to be there. And that doesn't necessarily mean a human. It can also mean an energetic, but it was a really like, it's a teaching that's sitting more deeply with me, because in the reparation of our world and in the healing of all these ancestral traumas that have happened from human habitation moving across the globe and cultures wiping other cultures out, there's a whole new possibility that we have present right now, and especially in the psychedelic medicine community, to truly ask permission. And that may, the answer might be no, you know. And so continuing to be really careful about sensing where we're going, how we're engaging with these medicines, and moving into a dialogue with the medicines, with the wisdom keepers, with the land itself, in a way that is based on truly honoring, is an important part of what I'm learning and what I want to bring to this field.
I just so love that you have called this holos, because everything in this conversation to me feels holistic. Everything that we've discussed today is the complete picture. And I love that the arc of the conversation starts with your life in Alaska, and it comes back to land and people and place. You know, and I think that in the Western world, we're very atomized. And I think a lot of people who are imagining psychedelic therapy right now are imagining it in the traditional kind of like doctor's office. You walk in, you take a ketamine lozenge, and you sit in a chair, and then you walk back into your life. And then there's a whole aspect of integration that happens there, where integration is kind of an uphill battle to hold on to the changes you've witnessed in your visions when you go back into a life that's exactly the same. And what I'm hearing from you is that psychedelic healing is holistic healing, and it requires not just these sacred medicines, not just these wise and in integrity practitioners, but also a sense of place and an ongoing healing in our relationship to place. And I think that is a really powerful message for people who feel called to this work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, as we were talking earlier, I was really reminiscing and thinking about the landscape of Esalen, which I completely poured my heart into for a number of years. And I merged with that landscape in a way that I got to know what I feel like it was archetypally teaching. And because it is this really dramatic mountain range that drops into the ocean and has amazing rivers and waterfalls and redwoods and all these different ecosystems, it's this gem that just felt like the perfect holding environment for really deep, powerful work to happen, like truly getting to know what one's individual potential is and what the potential of humanity is. And I think that there's these places on Earth that are particularly powerful in illuminating aspects of our psyche. So one thing that I learned there is that there are places that are ideal to human habitation that include a balance of the four elements. So water, earth, air, and fire. And I sense into a place and I sense into a landscape and look for those ideal conditions, because when you have those four conditions in balance or really strongly present, then there's this funnel of spirit that can come in, that meeting place of all the elements. And that's the human dimension or the dimension of consciousness. And so I think one of the reasons that a lot of the psychedelic renaissance of the 60s emerged out of Esalen, or a lot of the people were drawn there, was just because the holding environment of the land itself has so much to teach. And the legacy of the Esalen people living on that land and the energetics of what they offered there has so much to teach. And so, you know, I really look for and cultivate relationships with places that have that. And that's a big part of my life mission, is continuing to hone in on where can this work be done that is really going to be supportive of the overall human organism and healing process.
I love that. I love that. Well, I think we'll land there today for our conversation. Mm-hmm. It felt like a really beautiful place to land. I have a couple of questions to kind of end this, which is, first of all, for this podcast, who would you most like to hear from within the psychedelic community as a retreat leader, as a therapist? And it doesn't necessarily need to be a person or one answer. It could be a couple of things, could be a topic. What do you want to hear most as we launch this conversation series?
Yeah, I would love to hear from Indigenous leaders that carry particular traditions. And there are Indigenous leaders that really hold this moment in time as an opportunity for the exchange of ideas and the exchange of perspectives. And so I'd like to see some of that. And then I would really like to hear more from frontline researchers that are doing the work one-on-one with clients in a clinical setting that also has a ceremonial or sacred component to it. One of the things I really think is interesting about Stan Grof's legacy is that he, when he was a Czech psychiatry student, he was administering LSD in research labs to a whole wide variety of patients, and he learned so much through that observation. And so I'm really curious about the new protocols and medicines that are being used. I'd like to hear like very direct experience from researchers that are doing that work.
That's a great invitation. Both of those categories of guests are both really exciting for me, you know, so I'm definitely interested in having those conversations. Just to close today, how can listeners connect with you, support you? And you mentioned that part of Holos is creating a network of practitioners that you could work with around the world. And I'm sure that folks listening right now would be like, oh man, I want to be there. So it's a couple parts of the question, but how can people connect with you? How can people support you? And also, how could a psychedelic therapist potentially work with you, become involved? Where would they need to get their practice to be working with you?
Yeah, thank you for that. On your last question, feel free to just reach out to me. And, you know, I have a mix of criteria of people I work with, as well as like an intuitive sense. And so just one-on-one dialogue and knowing someone's story and where they're at in the arc of the development of their practice is really important to get the whole understanding of the individual. And then as far as people wanting to support Holos or learn more about what we're doing, you can go to holos.global, H-O-L-O-S.global. And we have some retreats listed there, and it's an evolving website as we build the network and as different pieces go public. And then I'm really open to direct communication as well. People can reach out to me through my email, or I have a website as well, ianmichaelhebert.com. And yeah, it's time to start building the new world. And so I'm here in Costa Rica working on it, and I'm happy to connect with anyone globally as well as within North America that wants to continue to build this network of accountability and good work.
I love that. And we'll have all of that in the show notes. What a great first podcast. Thank you, Ian Michael. This was really, really good, really helpful for our listeners, helpful for me launching this conversation series, helpful for me as your friend, just to know what you've been thinking about and working on, like getting to learn more about you. So really grateful for your time today, and I feel great about our conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for receiving my voice at the beginning of this podcast. I'm excited to see where it goes.
Me too. Thank you for joining us on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. If you enjoyed this show, please join the Psychedelic Therapy Facebook group to talk about it. You can also share it with your friends or leave a review on iTunes so more people can discover the show. The Psychedelic Therapy Podcast is presented by Maya, a platform designed to help psychedelic therapists manage and measure client journeys. You can head to mayahealth.com to learn more. The show is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide mental health or medical advice. Thanks for listening.